going to look this morning at a passage in the Old Testament out of the book of Micah. And what we're going to cover this morning is really about waiting. It's about the season of waiting. And in the Christmas season, there's a lot of waiting that goes on. And here's the big idea, that when you wait and you're waiting on God, that He, in your waiting for Him to help, you can always, 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 when you're waiting on God, you can always wait in hope. You can always wait in hope. And there's a lot of waiting during the Christmas season. Ultimately, we refer to it as Advent, waiting the coming arrival of our rescuer Jesus. And there's two waitings. In the Christian faith, there was the waiting of the arrival of the Christ child, the rescuer. And then now, after the arrival has already occurred, we who belong to God, who are in Christ, we wait for His return. So they were waiting, and now we're still waiting again for the arrival of Christ for His church. There's a saying about waiting. Maybe you've heard this. Good things come to those who wait. I'm not sure if you believe that still. I'm not sure if I believe that still, but our culture has used that phrase for as long as I can remember. And wouldn't you guess, if you were to just guess the regular nature of people, would you guess that most humans hate waiting? Would you probably estimate that people get frustrated in any kind of circumstance where they're stuck waiting? One of them comes to my mind at the Dome. If you go see the Syracuse Orange basketball team play, when the game starts, everybody stands up and they don't sit down until they score. Sometimes you have to wait a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and I'll speak for myself. 30 seconds into the game, I'm checking my watch saying, holy cow, how long is it going to take for these guys to score? And it feels like an eternity just waiting for a minute or 2 minutes, publicly and corporately. And if you have been shopping online, you may be waiting for your packages, and now that Amazon's got them down to 2 or 3 days, they've cut the waiting, obviously, down intensively, but there's still a wait. Anybody ever feel like 2 or 3 days is still too long? Good news, drones are going to be bringing these packages to you soon, personally, while you wait. It's going to be fantastic. I realized something about myself at some point during my adult life, and that is I don't like waiting, especially in lines. I don't like waiting in lines. And I have discovered this about myself when the family is thinking about and talking about where we're going to vacation. And one of the first things I think about when I think about our family vacation is, does it include waiting in lines? And I'm finding myself judging and deciding whether or not I'm going to participate or to sponsor or to authorize a family vacation based on how much waiting in line there is. That's why I don't tell my family this. That's why I can hardly take spending any time in a theme park, because it's from line to line to line. And I've tried getting those fake passes to go up the exit line, and after a while they catch on. And then you know what they do? They throw you and your whole family out of the park. That's what they do. Sometimes I think about how long the vacation, how much drive time will be included. How long will the driving take? How much time on the road is it going to cost us? And we have universally accepted a phrase in our culture that we use, and you probably don't even remember using this the last time you used it, but I bet you've used it, and it's this phrase, I can't wait. Oh man, I can't wait. I don't know if there's specific times you can remember using it recently, but it is a knee-jerk, instinctive cultural phrase that we throw out there about really lots of things. For me, of course, it's this upcoming Christmas morning because Santa's coming and I can't wait. Can't wait. And I think it expresses well how most of us deal with waiting. In the human race, we don't generally wait very well. We're not very good waiters. It seems to make us uncomfortable for some reason. It exposes, I think, for some of us, it exposes our fear of the unknown. We can't wait because we don't really know, and we have a fear of the unknown. And also, how many of you feel like you have a time-wasting allergy? You have an allergic reaction to wasting time. And so waiting irritates the time-wasting allergy, and I think provokes us to feel so uncomfortable wasting valuable time. It's likely that you can remember a phase of your life where you were waiting for something important. Just recently, I was working on some paperwork. If you have a college-age student, either now or recently, you probably remember the acronym FAFSA. Financial aid, federal financial aid, whatever, I stopped caring. I just stopped caring. So in filling out the FAFSA paperwork, there was an extensive, unusual, and unexpected wait time. Now get this, if you do anything with the government, I think you'll be able to appreciate this. When I did a little research to find out why the FAFSA paperwork was being held up and my daughter was unable to actually finish registering for college, get this, I finally discovered at some point in the months of waiting that the issue had to do with the IRS. Can you imagine my despair? So, of course, I thought, what do you pick up the phone and call the IRS and say, hey, this is Dan, what's going on with my daughter's paperwork? There was a delay with the IRS causing a delay with the FAFSA. And in an important phase of life, Kaylee and myself and our family are trying to say, sweetie, let's just wait this out. It's gonna be okay. And most of us have experienced in some way, shape, or form during an important phase of our life, having to sort through some kind of waiting. And if you think of where your life is now, if you're not where you expected to be, or you're uncertain about your future, or you're unclear about what's coming next, you probably feel stuck. There's probably a part of your life that you feel stuck in that is not moving at the pace you expected it to move, and the future is not revealing itself to you soon enough, and somehow you feel stuck. And I know what goes along with feeling stuck. When you feel stuck, along with it comes fear, anxiety, and doubt. Is God really in charge here? I'm a little afraid of what's going to happen. I have my anxieties related to all of these unknowns. And I would be willing to say that some of us have experienced the most painful phases of our life during phases and seasons of waiting. I remember many, many times sitting with somebody in the waiting room during a loved one's operation. And in so many different ways, the family expresses the same thing. I'm really, really most anxious about the not knowing. And as this time begins to elapse, I'm not necessarily anxious about the surgeon, I'm not necessarily anxious about the hospital, I'm not necessarily anxious about the recovery time. It's just the thinking about the future and all of the unknown, and it just continues to compress the anxiety related to not knowing. And how many times I've had a conversation with a spouse who separated from their own spouse, and they talk about how there's been a lot of pain in their marriage, but this pain of waiting to find out what the other spouse is going to do, how they're going to react. Are they going to file? Are they not going to file? Are they going to do something irrational? Are they going to turn on the kids? Are they going to turn the kids on me? And what they confess in these conversations is, honestly, with all the practical pain that's come through the relationship, one of the most painful aspects of this arrangement that I'm facing right now is just not knowing. It's the unknown. What is going to happen in the future? What if you learned a way to reduce your fear, your stress, or your anxiety when you're facing life's most difficult decisions and you don't know what the outcome is going to be? What if there was a way? What if you could figure out a way? What if you could deal more specifically with feeling stuck and waiting and having the fear of the unknown related to your future? What if you could find a way to fearlessly face your future and literally become better at waiting? What if you could do that? What if from now on, every time you waited, there was a surge, there was a rootedness, there was a confidence in you that came from having hope. That you genuinely, really, honestly had a level of hope that brought confidence to you. Hope is having confidence today that there is a better future coming tomorrow. Here's what hope is. Today, I'm confident that there's a better future coming tomorrow. And when you look at the scriptures, you will notice that there was a whole lot of waiting, but these waiters did not wait without hope. They had a unique confidence, and there's reasons that they had confidence. When you learn to improve your ability to wait and hope for something good, it's a vivid sign. Listen, people who can wait, especially when they're waiting on God to do something, you know what it's a sign of? It's a sign of spiritual maturity. Those who can wait with hope, with confidence, people who are good at waiting, evidence, they demonstrate a level of spiritual maturity. And if you think of it, think about anybody, any moment that you have raised kids in your house, one of the real signs of their immaturity is they have no patience. I mean, how many of you have heard this series of words strung together for years? It feels like, mom, 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 dad, daddy, dad, dad, and string it together to after one right after another. And it is evidence that these little ones are immature because they haven't learned to wait. Kids in minivans all over the world have been asking the same question for centuries. Are we there yet? And have you met any of these new kids? These new kids, they want answers. Are we there yet? Why not? It got so annoying in my minivan, I finally put an end to it. And I accused them of not trusting their parents. Stopped asking. I mean, I spent years answering the question, are we almost there yet? How much longer? Are we almost there? How much longer? Are we almost there? How much longer? And I said, sweetie, stop asking me that question. Just look at the GPS. Jeez. I'm not taking her anywhere anymore. And here's what we decided to do. Raquel and I decided that what we would ask the kids is, here's my answer to your question, are we almost there yet? Do you trust us? Yes, we trust you. Why are you asking us if we trust you? Then don't worry about it. Don't sweat the details here. We're going to get you there on time, and we're going to get you there safely, and you don't have to worry about that anymore. You can worry about other stuff. You can worry about how annoying you've been to your siblings for the past 25 minutes. You can concern yourself with other things. Listen, I wanted to point out something to you. It's the same with God. When there is fear of the future, and when there is anxiety over the unknown, and when we look ahead and it causes us some kind of anxiety or stress about the unknown, it always boils down to, can you trust the one who owns the future? It's always, always, most of the time, a trust thing. It's a trust thing. And here's what we'll see in our Christian faith. And I'm not just going to be referring to moments where you're waiting in lines that don't really matter, or you're traveling around town with your impatient kids. Rather, what if we could improve your ability to wait for something good to happen during the dark and some of the most hopeless phases of your life? And here's what we're going to see in the Christian faith. In the Christian faith, you've got this in your notes, the more trust you have in God, the less trouble you'll have in waiting. The more trust you have in God, the less trouble you'll have in waiting. How do I find the patience and strength to trust God and wait? You've got some notes there. I'm going to give you three trust builders to help you wait with hope. Christmas is a waiting season. It was a waiting season, by the way, for the Israelites, God's people, centuries before. It's a waiting season for us. How many of you anticipate, look forward to, or otherwise excited about the arrival of Christmas when it comes? Christmas Day, Christmas Week, Christmas Day. Some of you aren't committed yet. You're 40 years old, still haven't committed to being excited about the arrival of Christmas. So how do we apply, how do we find the patience and strength to trust God and wait? Here's three trust builders to help you wait with hope. Let's look at what Micah says in Micah chapter 7. Micah 7, verse 7. And Micah is a prophet. He is expressing the words that God is speaking to his people, and he's actually speaking them through his people, the prophets. And here's what Micah says. Micah is considering that his people have been oppressed and occupied by the Babylonians, and that his culture and his people and their faith and their worship is being crushed, and it's being lost, and it's being forfeited. And here's what Micah says. Micah says, and this is recorded in the Old Testament, "As for me, I look to the Lord for help. I wait confidently for God to save me, and my God will certainly hear me." So here's what he says. I wait for God's help, and when I'm waiting, I have confident certainty. And Micah expresses the biblical picture of hope in God. And the biblical picture of hope in God is confidence and endurance. It means you're confident that God is going to provide for you. God is going to do something. God is going to work on for his glory and your good. There's a confidence that God is at work, and there's also an endurance. It's an ability to keep waiting. That's what biblical hope is. So I want to just remind you together, let's remember here for a second, if we could, the Christian faith's descriptive story. All the way back at the beginning, God creates, and he creates in the garden. And by the way, he creates perfectly humans, all of the universe and all of the earth, and he does a perfect, supreme, masterful job making everything as it ought to be. It's beyond what we could imagine, and it's absolutely perfect. And then, deceived, humanity rebels against God and continues then to walk in brokenness and separation from God until God delivers promises to his people that he's going to fix things. And how does he deliver those promises? He sends prophets who speak the words of God on behalf of God to the people of God. And he makes his promises through his prophets. And what God is doing is God is preparing his people that he is going to work, and then his people have this responsibility. After hearing from the prophets that God is going to restore and rescue them, all they have is one job. God is going to do all the work, and all they have is one job. What's that job? It's just wait. Anybody get irritated waiting 20 minutes, an hour, a day? How about centuries? Centuries that God said, "I see you, I love you, and I'm going to rescue you." And then they wait and wait and wait. And then finally, words spring from the prophet like this: "I have confidence in my Lord that he will help us. I have certainty that that he is going to help us in the future." And Micah says, "As for me, I look to the Lord for help. I wait confidently for God to save me, and my God will certainly hear me." And here's what we discover. We discover that God's control is supreme. God is supremely in control over all things. And by the way, just a reminder to you who are people of faith, that God has been supremely in control from the beginning. He has launched a plan of his own to rescue his people, and he is supremely in control. God's control is absolutely supreme, and it's demonstrated in the way that he has provided a solution. He's helping his people through the prophets, and he's making promises through the prophets. And if you've got a Bible, you can see this yourself. Half the Bible is loaded with the promises of God through the prophets that he's going to rescue his people. And then you see in the New Testament the fulfillment of those promises, that he has rescued his people. And then there's more promises that one day he's going to return and ultimately one day finally and fully rescue his people called his church. Secondly, God's care, you've got this in your notes, God's care is unfailing. God's care never fails. His control is supreme and his care never fails. And I love this because Micah says in verse 18, you'll see this on the screen behind me, that he says something very specific. He says, I love this, "Where Is there another God like you? Micah confesses that God's character is unique, that his love is unfailing, that there isn't a God anywhere else. Where is a God, another God like you, who pardons the guilt of the remnant, overlooking the sins of his people? You will not stay angry with your people forever because you delight in showing unfailing love. And so, check this out. Here's what God does with his people. God overlooks their flaws. God doesn't overreact to our flaws. Instead, he overlooks them. Upon our faith in Christ, he passes over and counts our sins against us no more. God pardons our guilt. He doesn't punish our guilt. Upon our faith in Jesus, he's delighted to care for us with love that never fails. And Micah confesses openly in public here that God's love never fails. It's unfailing love. And when he gets angry and expresses his wrath, Micah takes comfort in knowing this. I already know the future. God does not stay angry forever. He relents. God's love, God's care is absolutely unfailing and can be depended upon. If you are a working parent, if you have to leave your children regularly, in some cases, leave your children daily, initially, your kids might have a reaction that you've left them, right? That they have to get used to being without their caregiver, their parent. And wouldn't you agree that in a short amount of time, our children get used to us being gone? And the other thing that you may notice as well is that while you're gone, the nervous breakdowns stop after a while. And you may have seen this in if you work in the nursery care department, and eventually the children get used to being without their parents for some level of time, and there's no more nervous breakdowns. And I want to just suggest to you there's a reason for that. The reason that our kids don't have a nervous breakdown, even though they've been dropped off and they're waiting for working parents to come home from work, is because they expect that since they've done this before many times, that they can wait, and if they wait long enough, mom or dad or grandma or grandpa or whoever the caretaker is after school or after whatever, they eventually come back. And the reason why their anxiety subsides is because after the parents have returned over and over and over again, they start to grow a confidence that even though they're gone now, they're going to come back later. And I wonder, I think it's possible that they grow a confident certainty that even though they don't know the future, they can expect something very specific because it's already happened over and over and over again. Now this brings me to what Micah says last. Micah says, as he prophesies to and about God's people, that God's track record is famous. God has already routinely, over and over and over again, delivered on the promises that he's made. And what Micah says is that God's track record is famous. And he uses this phrase in verse 19. Micah 7:19, he uses this phrase, "Once again you will have compassion on us. You will trample our sins under your feet and throw them into the depths of the ocean." How does Micah know that God is going to trample his sins under feet and throw them into the ocean? Here's why. Because Micah and all of God's people already know their history. And they remember that God has already thrown their enemy, the Egyptians, under the sea called the Red Sea when they were pursuing them. And God took these enemies and miraculously threw all of their enemies under the sea. And here's what Micah's saying. Don't forget God's track record. Don't forget that God's already done this once. Don't forget that if God's done this once, we can expect that God's going to do it what? Again. He's going to do it in the future. He has going to do it in the future. And here's what he's going to do in the future. He's going to take a far bigger enemy than the Egyptians who can kill their body. And he's going to take our sin that can kill the soul and separate for eternity. And God's going to take that enemy, a greater enemy with a capital E, and he's going to throw those sins into the bottom of the sea. And he's going to trample over them with his own Savior's feet. How do we know he's going to do that? Because he's already done it before. There is a confident certainty that raises up in your heart when you pay attention to and you keep track of God's track record. We can have confidence that he's going to do what we do something good in the future because he's so many times done it in the past. You know, when it's dark and hard to see, so many bad things can happen. And I would be willing to bet that most of the time when it's dark and there's not enough light to see, that we slow down. We don't walk as fast. We don't reach as fast. We don't, we're not as abrupt in our movements. And here's what I've noticed. I've noticed that in our lives, when it's dark and we don't know what's going to happen in the future, it's easy to get lost and it's easy to get hurt when you're walking in the dark. And if you there's a few things that I can think of that you might be waiting for. You might find yourself in the dark waiting for and doubting that your spouse will finally or eventually turn their heart to God. And after years and years of praying and waiting. And you might be here today, and you might be a spouse who has struggled with belief and doesn't necessarily, you might respect your spouse's beliefs, but you don't share them. And I don't think it's any secret to you to know that your spouse is praying for you, is praying that your heart at one point or other would surrender and turn to God, and their prayers are being prayed while they're waiting. And while they're waiting for something to occur in the heart of their own spouse. Also, you might have a rebellious or a wandering child or grandchild, and you've been waiting on God, and you feel like it's dark, and you feel like you don't know how long you're going to have to wait, and it's so easy in the dark to get lost and get hurt, but you're waiting for your wandering child to return to God. You think about and you consider and you question, how is this possible? I know how they were raised. I know what kind of values. I know what kind of faith they were raised in, and I'm not quite sure how it's possible, but they're far from God. And what do you do in the meantime? You're just waiting. You're waiting. You're waiting for something to spark. You're waiting for something to happen. You're waiting for them to get to the right people, the right church, the right pastor, the right friends, the right moment. You also might be waiting specifically about an uncertain future. You're not exactly sure what's going to happen in the future. And you are hoping that the future, that whatever it is you're waiting for, will turn out good. It will turn out good, that somehow God will cause you to trust and treasure Jesus even more. I know people who are trapped in lawsuit proceedings and they don't know what's going to happen. Litigation. I know other people who are facing a career change and the path of their career has been abruptly changed, or they've hit a dead end or they've hit a wall and now they're trying to figure out what they're going to do next and they're waiting to see. And for many of us, we have been diagnosed and there's some kind of treatment that's being tried, or maybe a diagnosis isn't yet been provided, and you just wait and wait and wait. What's going to happen to my health? What's going to happen in the future? Other people making plans for family and desperately hoping and desperately trusting that sometime they will be able to begin a family, start a family. In the meantime, they wait. Others who've already started a family, but they have a risk pregnancy, a high-risk pregnancy, and they're not sure what's going to happen at the end of those 9 months. I think of some of you, too, who are so concerned about the erosion of our country, and you spend a lot of time watching the news thinking, what is going to happen to our country? And for some of us, our hair is on fire. What is going to happen in the future? And then others who are suffering with anxiety and depression over a whole list of circumstances that are out of your control and you're not sure how it's going to turn out. And then I know that there are some of us who have a painful past and we're not sure we're ever going to recover. We have a painful past that our hope is, and what we're waiting for is, that eventually our past is going to leave us alone. And it's going to allow us to finally turn toward God. We have a financial loss that was painful, or our heart was broken by somebody we trusted, or the innocence of someone that we loved and cared for was violated, etc., etc., on and on and on. Here's the bottom line. Someone, somewhere in this room is probably waiting for something, for God to do something. We're trying to figure out, how do we wait? When things are bad, when we start losing hope, when we're uncertain about what the future holds, when I'm afraid I don't know what's going to happen, it is so easy to lose hope. And in some ways, when you lose hope, in so many ways, when you lose hope, you begin a spiritual death. Some of you may have heard this about this experiment with lab rats. If you're a rat lover, let me warn you, pastor's going to give you a disclaimer. If you love rats, you can refill your coffee for the next few minutes, slip out and go to the bathroom for the next few minutes, but there's an experiment that has been done with rats related to hope. And it's a pretty famous experiment by this time, but there is a, lab rats were put in a container of water. And the scientist who was experimenting on these rats was keeping track of how long that they would survive in the water before they drowned. And he changed a lot of the variables in the experiment. And routinely, there were lab rats that were drowning within 5 to 10 minutes. Then there were other lab rats who would swim longer before they would drown. And he discovered that there was one circumstance that helped the rats swim for as long as 60 hours, with very, very few of them swimming even 81 hours. And here's how. Those rats were the only rats where the scientist every now and then would reach in and put his hands under the rat and pull it out of the water. And then he put the rat back down in the water. And routinely, those rats were able to swim for hours and hours and hours longer than the rats who never had any assistance up out of the water. And here's what they discovered. They discovered that when the rat has hope, they have a will to live. And the will to live keeps them swimming and keeps them swimming longer and keeps them swimming more vigorously because they believe that somehow, some way, if they just keep swimming, someone is going to scoop them out of that water and give them a little bit of hope that their circumstances are going to change. And listen, I hate to compare you to lab rats. I really do. I mean, it's so... But there's a way in which God has wired us that requires you and I to hold on to hope, to keep waiting, to really believe, to genuinely, wholeheartedly have a confident certainty that the hands of the Creator, who is completely in control and whose love is unfailing and whose track record is flawless, is able at any moment, according to his plan, for his own glory and for our good, to scoop us up and out and do something good to bring rescue to us. And for all who are waiting for the return of Christ, ultimately we wait for that great hope, the blessed hope of the second coming. But in the meantime, while we're waiting, you can face your stressful future. And here's in your notes, you've got this. You can wait on God with a settled confidence that whatever he has for you in the future is for your own good. Whatever he has for you in your own in the future is for your own good. How in the world do we know that? If you're single and you're hoping to be married, if you're broke and you wish you had money, if you're wandering and you wish you could find your way, if you're a widow and you wish that your life circumstances, you could go back and erase time, rewind everything. If you're unemployed and you wish you had a career in the future, if you have something undiagnosed and you wish they could get to the, here's what the scriptures teach us, that God's track record it is consistent, and he always proves that he can be trusted, that whatever's happening to you and whatever is coming your way in the future, it will always be to glorify himself and for your own good. Ultimately, maybe to turn our hearts toward trusting him. When God has already done something good many times over, many centuries before, you can endure. You've got this in your notes too. You can endure your stressful uncertainty by reminding yourself of what God has faithfully done in the past. By the way, you know what your hope is built on? Your hope is not built on superstition. You're not crossing your fingers taking this little blind leap that God can do something good in the future. You know what you're doing? Your hope is built on centuries and centuries and centuries of God always providing what's best for his people. Always faithfully, all the time. And it's summed up in the work of the author of Hebrews, who says this: I, God, will never leave you, and I will never forsake you. How do I know that's true? How can I have confident certainty? Because all you have to do is remember the centuries and centuries and centuries where if God was going to leave somebody and forsake somebody, it would have been the wickedness of his own people centuries before, and he didn't do it. His love is unfailing. His care is unfailing. And he has a track record. He never left his people in past centuries, and he won't do it in the future. So when you're looking ahead and you don't know the answer, you don't know the next step, you don't know what the plan is, you don't know what the outcome's going to be, when you have hope and when you're waiting in hope, you don't have to panic. We don't have to panic. Even if you're waiting for, you've made a choice, you're a young adult here, or you're a late adolescent and you've made a choice about what university you're going to and you haven't received your acceptance letter, you don't have to panic. Let me put it in lab rat terms. We can just keep swimming. Keep swimming with hope. Keep swimming. God is going to intervene somehow for your own good and for his glory. For some of you who are waiting for that baby to arrive beyond the due date, you're probably tired of all the comments. Whoa, hey, holy cow, when's that baby due? Despite that, you can wait with hope. You're waiting for that final offer to go through on the home that you picked out for your family. A callback about your major job interview or promotion, or to meet even one decent prospect as a potential spouse, as you've waited and waited and waited, and you've done the right things, and you've chosen, made the right choices, and you've stepped in the right direction each time, and you're trusting that God is ordering your steps, and you are waiting to meet just one decent prospect for a spouse. Don't panic. Don't panic. No crisis, no doubt. God has faithfully proven himself that he will never leave you, he will never forsake you. And when we get this right, we're willing to wait even longer. We're willing to wait even longer on a God who is at work. We don't feel like we need to tell God what to do. The more we trust God, the less trouble we'll have in waiting, in hope. One of the things that Jesus has said, our ushers are coming now to pass out our elements for communion, but one of the things that Jesus said, he said, while you're waiting, would you continue to remember what I did? And they're going to be passing out these elements to you, by the way. If you're today you're a guest with us and you have placed your trust in Jesus and you recognize and acknowledge and understand what these elements represent, then we invite you to join with us in celebrating all that the communion ceremony represents. If you're not quite clear if you've put your trust in Jesus or what the elements mean, I just would invite you to let that tray pass right by you. And here's why. We want that when the time comes where you fully understand what these elements mean, that you'll be able to celebrate and participate with us wholeheartedly, and you'll be able to do so with joy. Jesus is reminding his disciples, and what he's saying is this: while you're waiting, continue to remember the way that God has intervened. While you're waiting, always remember the way that God has intervened. Don't forget, don't lose track, don't lose hope, don't despair, that while you're waiting for something good to happen, for the return of Christ to finally and ultimately save us and sanctify us, we can wait with hope, and Jesus reminds us over and over.